computer literacy, and a willingness to work within a dynamic group to help shape this great station are all desirable qualifications. People of underrepresented groups are strongly encouraged to apply. Some committee hours are required outside of board meetings. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, May 15th to ensure consideration. Voting begins Thursday, May 30th and continues until the annual meeting on Sunday, June 30th. More information and board applications are available at WORTFM.org or on paper in the station lobby. Help us keep WORT a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today.
On April 24th, Just Bach will conclude its season of free concerts with Bach's motet Lobet den Herrn and two other works. The performers will include Sarah Braley, soprano, Jeffrey Williams, alto, and Stephen Wilson, tenor, both of whom are part of New York Polyphony, John Bregel, tenor, and Ryan Cherry, bass, plus students from the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Music. This gala performance will be coming on Wednesday, April 24th at noon at Luther Memorial Church, 1021 University Avenue in Madison. Remember that all Just Bach concerts are also posted for free on YouTube the Friday following the concert. WORT, 89.9 FM in Madison, is proud to sponsor local live early music performances.
Hello and good evening. You are listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison. And welcome to the Perpetual Notion Machine for April 18th, 2024. I'll be your mad scientist, Wally. With me in the studio is fellow mad scientist, Kevin Bachiber. He is an insect agricultural expert at UW-Madison's College of Animal and Life Sciences, and recently went to academia after a decade in the industry. He specializes in crickets, but currently is working on a project on the black soldier fly. And generally tonight, we're talking about insects for food and feed. Welcome to the Perpetual Notion Machine, Mr. Kevin.
Thank you, Wally. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, so happy Radio Day to talk about Swarm to Table, a recent event that happened at UW-Madison. Did you make it over there for that?
Yeah, we were there last Saturday.
Cool. That's awesome. I'm excited to share with the people of Madison and the greater internets about what it is that you do. And that's why I have a list of questions here. And I also invite you to ask your own questions as we go along, and figure out how people can ask these questions themselves.
Sounds great to me.
Cool. So tell me a bit about yourself and how you got into raising insects.
Yeah, so my first taste with edible insects took place in Thailand in 2007. Went there and as part of a fairly foodie experience, ate the bugs and was like, this is pretty good. Then, Then in 2013, the UN released a 206-page report saying that more people should eat insects, and we decided to move into business in that.
Cool. So what was the thing that kind of got you over? Us here, you know, we don't eat bugs necessarily, but yeah, maybe on accident or maybe as a need, but it's a whole different mentality than really what we often feel. Like, as a biologist, I'm into it, but how did you start eating bugs? Like, what kind of bug did you eat?
Sure. I mean, I think most Americans start their insect eating experience with honey.
Oh, yeah.
So every language that where people eat insects, there are words that are definitely food words that take the insect that's eaten locally far away from the realm of other insects, which are like associated with dirt, filth, disease. And so, you know, in the U.S., honey is kind of the most common insect-derived product that's eaten, and it's very much separated in the same way that a cow is different than beef.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's so, yeah, and I should say insects because bugs mean coleoptera to a scientist, right? So we're talking about a whole revolution from what I've seen, and a great thing for kind of kickoff to Earth Week, where I've seen you speak before at various events with the Nelson Institute and with the community over at the Monona Terrace, talking about just how important potential for new kinds of protein is to the United States and the world and the internet even. For what it can mean for our production and sustainable transfer of energy to what we care about.
Right. And I think that's where you see a lot of the progress and a lot of the opportunity coming in insect agriculture, is really adding another link to a sustainability chain. And so that's part of the project that we're doing here at the UW, is working on using black soldier fly to essentially recycle waste from the farm, whether it's spoiled grains or scrap product or manure, into additional levels of food for the chickens and the cows that are on the farm, as well as for crops.
And to help our farmers with those excess. I mean,
exactly.
We're a state that has a lot of amazing agriculture, and that comes at its own price, and that price can be manure lagoons and things.
Right, and run off into our rivers and lakes and...
Hopefully not.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I just have a fun question as far as like, so bugs, insects as a protein, just explain more how they're sustainable or like why we should care about them as a food source.
Yeah. So the thing that initially drew me to insects from an agricultural basis is just how much less space, food, and water that they really take to make a pound of animal protein versus a cow, chicken, or a sheep. And we've really kind of seen the numbers as they've like worked out over the last decade and a half to be things that are, in terms of yield per cubic foot of land, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you start stacking in a vertical agriculture, you can have layers upon layers of insect farming units all stacked on top of each other. So it really becomes a highly space efficient and highly resource efficient thing. Then since insects sit so low on the food chain, you can feed them a lot of feedstock that many other animals wouldn't be able to digest and stay healthy. And they do just fine on it.
That's amazing. So what does it take to make like a pound of crickets?
More work than, you know, you necessarily want to put in for just 1 pound. But you're going to end up putting...
How about a ton of crickets then?
Yeah, yeah. So you're going to end up putting in probably a ton and a half to 2 tons of feed.
Okay.
I don't know the water figure as well off the top of my head.
I wouldn't think you would.
On the ton weight.
It depends upon the system, right?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And you can also do a ton in a few hundred square feet.
Wow.
Yeah. Compared to the acreage that you need for cows.
Mm-hmm. So I've always been impressed, as far as I can tell, the story that I know, that you've got one of the first ever permits for making this legal in the United States. Can you tell me about that story?
Yeah. So back in 2014, when the insect agriculture industry was really starting to burst out in the U.S., we ended up moving to Youngstown, Ohio, and started what became Big Cricket Farms. We worked with FDA and local state authorities, and over like a 19-month period, we built a process by which they could come in and regulate and license us. So we were the first FDA-inspected human food-grade insect farm in American history. And then we went on and we taught that same technique to a lot of people in our industry, figuring that we would all be able to grow together. And, you know,
awesome.
12 years later, it's worked out pretty well.
And you're an international insect superstar. You've got to go around the world and teach folks a little bit here and there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've built farms everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, It's a good time. It's a great way to spend winters in particular. Anywhere equatorial, yeah. I'm available for that winter discount.
And that's part of the whole jam, is that insects are, they're not exothermic like us mammals, right? They don't make heat themselves. They just are more passive. So you need heat, or they don't do very well in cold.
Yeah, there's a more complex term for it.
Okay.
But they generate some of their own heat, especially en masse, when they're all together.
Ah.
But an individual insect is strongly cold-blooded.
Got you.
And so that's why you see, that's why you see a lot of insect consumption in tropical countries, is that there's just more insect biomass available over the course of the year, and there's more frequent, just like we'll be seeing later this year with the cicadas, in a lot of more equatorial climes, you'll see that kind of frequent explosion of termites or locusts or whatever, and they're just a part of the food source for that area.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
And part of the food chain and the whole process that makes those places so abundant. Okay, so when you bring your knowledge and your ability to make food to a place that is not America, that is used to eating insects, that must be exuberant. I mean, it's just got to be a joyous thing. And it is here as well, right? But it's just...
It's a totally different experience, especially in areas that have been hit by a lot of hunger issues in the last decade or so. We worked on a project last year in Guadalajara, Mexico, where we were working with some local nonprofits, kind of on a heifer international type program, where we were teaching local people how to raise the insects, crickets in this case, and they took to it really fast which is always a pleasure to see too. And just, began feeding the cricket waste to the chickens that they were given through another nonprofit as kind of a means of hoping to gain them some level of just ability to exist on this earth.
Just protein starving. Sustainability.
And even with their chickens, there's no chicken feed up on the side of this mountain. So the waste from the crickets makes an excellent chicken feed in those situations. By the time we left, their chickens were laying eggs for the first times in their lives. We had half a dozen people that we had trained directly to farm the crickets, and they were already working their way into a school breakfast program.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's very rewarding work, but also fairly difficult.
So eggs with crickets.
The eggs were from the chickens, but the chickens had been better nutrition compared to what they were eating before that they were finally able to lay their first eggs.
That is a really beautiful story people that are looking to find ways to make a difference. This is a fundamentally amazing process that we don't really see as mainstream. And I think it could be one of the biggest things we can do for the environment, but we have to make cricket protein bars or something. What's the cricket recipe? I think of spicy crickets. If you can get that, in Mexico, I know all kinds of interesting stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty basic when it comes to the crickets. I like them wok fried with some sesame oil, chili, a little bit of chili, a little bit of garlic, and some lemongrass on it.
Ooh.
I do think that we're starting to see a lot of interesting functional benefits from eating insects that goes beyond the protein. So there's a few early stage studies and some human trials that are happening with some collaborators of ours at Colorado State, where they're feeding prebiotic cricket fiber to patients with a wide variety of conditions.
Cool. So that fiber, that's what another thing I've learned from you is that crickets and other insects, it's the only source of protein that has its own built-in soluble fiber, like oatmeal.
Yeah. There's a variety of ways to get them, right? But there's a lot of functional characteristics and complex proteins and complex biomolecules, man. Right. We're finding new and interesting uses for them.
Well, hey, we have to take a break here, but thank you so much for being on, Kevin, and welcome once again to the Perpetual Notion Machine.
Thank you.
And Got you. And also, thank you to everyone out there that has donated to the station in the past and that has been part of this conversation over time that has made this station what it is. I'm new here volunteering, and I love it as far as getting to host this and bring on my fellow mad scientist friends. So this is Fire Cricket, as I would say. I had Ice Frog on last month who talked about frozen frogs, and this man is fire with crickets. So once again, you're listening to the Perpetual Motion Machine. My name is Wally, and I'm here with Kevin Bakkeber. We're talking about his research into insects and agriculture and insects for food and feed. I'm always curious about the real inside story. Like, what does it take? Like, how much work does it take? It's agriculture. It's farming.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
Yes.
So, like, to raise a ton of crickets, I know this is all rough.
Sure.
Like, how many people would it take to do that? Or, like, not that much space.
Right.
But there's a lot of process.
Yeah, it depends a bit on the type of insects. So, crickets are definitely more of a high-maintenance kind of beast, right? Mm-hmm. The black soldier fly that we're working with at UW are much more like a worm composting situation. Okay. Where you set them up for success, you ensure that the conditions are right, and then you walk it away until they're done doing their digestion, right?
Cool.
And they've churned whatever waste whatever feedstock you put in. You've got some waste from them. You've got their little fully grown bodies, and you sieve them out and you're done.
Okay.
But it is the process of farming, right, is moving tons of things from one space to another,
yes,
resting for a little while, then moving it back to the first space.
And they don't go bad on the way.
Exactly.
It's a lot, right? So as far as the black soldier fly,
yeah,
for application, you mentioned a few different ideas, but what has been most promising so far that the lab is working on?
Yeah, so we're still in the early setup stage for our colony. We're really focused on, like I said, working on the digesting on-farm wastes into usable feed products. So you're typically looking at powderized protein. There's a lot of oil that can be pressed off the bugs as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you feed them to the animals, and surprisingly, animals that have survived or that have evolved to eat insects as part of their diet have a better health outcome and often a better animal welfare outcome.
We're working with
cows and chickens specifically, as well as food waste from De Jope Dining Hall.
Oh, so you're actively composting?
We will be, yeah.
Wow.
Just a couple of weeks here, we'll be started. Yeah.
And that's going to be part of a whole. So there seems to be kind of ecosystem wide consequences. So if we're not turning waste into the giant hill of waste, but instead cycling it, that's huge.
Right. Yeah.
Would this work with, as far as like other kind of integrated, like small systems? Can you do like, as far as working with like tilapia or kind of other types of, those kind of like the biome biodigesters, like where do insects fit into there?
So not so much with tilapia specifically.
Oh,
they
yeah.
tend to be a vegetarian fish.
Mm-hmm.
Salmonids, so trout, salmon, and then bass and other,
yeah.
Fish really delight in eating the bugs. We see them a lot too with outcomes for layer hens and for broiler chickens. So broiler chickens grow up really, really fast, right? Mm-hmm. And they tend to like have a problem where they break their legs because they grow so fast that their legs can't support them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So when you put live black soldier fly into their play area, if you will, they run around, they like peck, they like grab at them, they have like a good old time. I enjoy watching it. It's good for everyone. And as a result, they get a lot more leg exercise, and you see like a lot more of these a lot fewer leg breaks, a lot more animals who are living to their fullest life until the end.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so now people are out there and they're listening and they're saying, oh, Wally and Kevin are these amazing mad scientists, but like, how do I become a mad scientist? Like, how do I start raising insects? Like maybe even just for compost, like worms, you know, red regulars, what are some resources you could recommend to think about how people can start to maybe have their own insect farm or to, and you know, word of the wise, man. We're live here.
Yeah.
Changing the world.
So, especially during the summer, you can attract black soldier fly just naturally. They'll be outside, and they're probably already in your compost heaps. There are a wide variety of different, look up like black soldier fly composting things that allow the bugs, when they're kind of near the end of their larval stage, they want to slouch away to somewhere like cool and wet to pupate so that they can grow up to be the full flies, which turns out to be a great harvesting mechanism. So you see it a lot. There's these really great systems for like backyard chickens where you can put your kitchen waste, you can put your chicken waste, everything like that in there. And then the larvae will kind of self-harvest. You just make sure they self-harvest into your where your chickens are. And they'll take care of the rest.
Wow.
We're pretty new at UW, though. So we have an extension component to our program. So over the next year or so, we'll be putting up a website. We'll be putting together some webinars. We're thinking about maybe MREA and looking at some of the other renewable energy fairs as places to do some outreach.
Excellent.
And as you said, we just did Swarm to Table. We had a couple hundred people who came through, learned a lot about bugs, ate some bugs themselves.
It's got to be a transformative experience.
It is. It always is.
So back to crickets for a minute.
Yeah.
What about people that love their, I mean, they also must have a market as like food for your
reptiles.
And yeah, like that's kind of the start of the industry, I would think, to some extent, right?
Yeah. In the US, there have been insects sold for fish bait since like the 1940s. And then 1960s, 1970s is when reptile ownership started picking up in the US, and that made a new market segment for these already existing fish bait farms. So I know a lot of these people, you know, they're third, fourth generation cricket farmers at this point in places that were once just like, you know, a hill by a river in the down country. And now over the last century, there's a highway overpass that's been built over them and cities grew up around. Yeah.
On the map.
Yeah.
Hopping around. Is there a place that you know of in Madison or nearby that you could actually buy, like, that people are selling crickets that you could go and try? Or like maybe like a restaurant or even other purveyors? I know this is off the cusp here.
Yeah. Not so much in Madison right now. I know that they had cricket protein at the Willie Street Co-op for a while.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they still do, but locally, there is Jim and Eat Cricket in Ames, Iowa, and they do dry roasted crickets with regional and wide variety of flavors, also a couple other products, and then Three Cricketeers up in the Twin Cities. Also,
the Three Cricketeers.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So anything more you can tell me about how you kind of came out of practitioner world? You spent a lot of time in the trenches moving boxes, and now you're doing more of the research. What took you there, and what have you learned that you can apply to the research? I mean, I know it's a lot, but as a practitioner coming into academia, what are you seeing as far as this type of work?
I have to tell you, after 10 years of being in the field with everyone, you end up with so many questions. You just want to know the answer to. And maybe you write down one out of every 5 or 10 questions that you actually have. And in the industry side of things, you know, you really have a different set of complex equations that are keeping your business running. You don't necessarily have the time to investigate. After 10 years of traveling the world, I am ready to like sleep in my own bed a few more nights a year. And to answer some of these questions, you know, it's really burning questions that you end up having, whether it's about human health or whether it's about how these bugs actually work. Like, what can they even see, man?
A lot, dude.
Yeah, who knows? I don't know. Like, we need to ask a scientist at this point.
Well, if you don't know, I mean, you think more like a cricket
I have
than anyone
theories.
I know.
I have theories, you know, but it would be nice to get some confirmation.
So again, as far as people getting involved and thinking about either reading up on this, or do you have any resources that you can recommend that people that want to dip their toe into the pool of crickets, or, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's definitely over the last decade or so, are plentiful resources that have come out on YouTube and everything like that to do the smaller scale insect agriculture. There's also EAWAG, E-A-W-A-G. It's a Swiss extension service.
Oh.
Has a, essentially, I don't want to mischaracterize what they do too heavily on the radio.
But
they
have,
if you want to deal with 5 tons of waste per day and turn that into like 2 tons of waste per day, then they are your Black Soldier Fly guide.
Cool. That is, yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. I know, right? We move through a lot very fast.
I'm excited. I think that's a huge part of our systems here in Wisconsin because you know what? We want to make cheese.
Yeah.
We have dairy. We have all this waste. And if we can turn that around and make it into something that makes chickens healthy and can feed our people here in a healthy way while reducing
groundwater pollution and
phosphorus, probably all the various things that we think about here in Yahara watershed for how we want to do this stuff. This is research that's worth doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a pleasure to be able to do it here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what's the lab again? What I know we're, you're in Cal's with as am I, but where are you out of?
We're out of the old dairy barn, attached to the animal welfare lab.
Got you. It was at the Department of, like, what was it again?
College of Animal and Dairy Sciences.
That's what it is. Cool. Yeah. We have our own dairy science here over by Babcock, of course.
We do. There's a wild amount of, like, room for different animals over in that section of the campus.
Okay, we got 1 minute left, but we're thinking 175 here at University of Wisconsin. How do you think we'll be eating insects 175 years from now?
Interesting. I think that it will likely be one of the main compositional food sources.
Yeah.
Whether it's a utopia or a dystopia, I think bugs will be on the menu.
And especially with maybe like warming temperatures, we can have
exactly,
more biomass. Right?
Exactly. If they're not eating us, you know.
Clip, well, what they do as well. That's part of it. It's a cycle of life, right?
Yeah.
And so Cliff Bar, if you're listening, put those insects on the menu. Let's get the Barcleef Insecto or whatever. Love to have that. It's almost time for our show to end. And thank you so much for coming here to WORT and doing live radio with an amazing crew in the back. I've been joined in the studio by Kevin Bakkeber, who is an insect expert specializing in crickets at UW-Madison, specializing in crickets and also the black soldier fly. So Kevin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I've been your host, Wally, and I'll be here next month, but tune in every Thursday from 7 to 7:30 for the Perpetual Notion Machine, where there is a whole collective of hosts that you could join and volunteer even if you wanted to help us out. And until then, you've been listening to the Perpetual Motion Machine Science News Show on WRT 89.9. And up next is our man on the inside, Melvin Hinton, with Radio Literature. Have a great night.
Are you a fan of classical music, especially early music? Do you enjoy hearing it on the radio?
WORT is now seeking a volunteer to join the hosts of Musica Antiqua, a long-running program highlighting the origins of classical music from the medieval era through the Renaissance and Baroque periods.
If you're free early Sunday mornings, we hope you will join us. Hosting a show on WORT includes choosing what to play, typing in your playlist, on-air announcing, and basic audio engineering.
You don't need radio experience, just a passion for this style of music and the willingness to work with us to increase and engage the many listeners and supporters in this show's early morning audience.
You can share your appreciation for this ageless art form by joining our 8 to 11 Sunday morning classical lineup. Volunteer applications are available at the station or online at WORTFM.org.
WORT is an equal opportunity, affirmative action organization, and members of underrepresented groups are strongly encouraged to apply.
Welcome to Radio Literature, Madison's weekly look at poetry, fiction, nonfiction, theater, and experimental writing for readers of all ages. Settle in for a half hour of conversation on radio literature. Here's your host, Melvin Hinton.
Hello, I am not Melvin Hinton. Welcome to Radio Literature. My name is Jan Levine Thal, and I'm sitting in for Melvin this week. My guest today is Erica Monroe Kane, who is the Executive Director of the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters. Welcome, Erica.
Thanks, Jan. It's great for me to be here.
It's great because you're far, far away, and we're able to do this by the magic of radio.
It's true. I am not in Wisconsin right now. I'm happily in my home city of St. Louis, Missouri, visiting my parents. So I was glad that we would be able to connect, like you said, through the magic of technology.
Me too. So let's jump right into it because we only have a half hour, and the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters does a lot, and we'd like to have you talk about a lot of those things. So first of all, just say, what is the Academy and why is it important?
So the Wisconsin